The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Pagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the QA is the important part, the question and answer. We like to make this an interactive conversation every Monday morning about the top tech news stories that are hitting our feeds, kind of chat out our feelings about the week before, maybe some news broke over the weekend. That's why I like to hold my show on a Monday, so we can get our tech week started, right? I'm already seeing an incredible crew. I'm seeing Barry Johnson has been mixing it up. Mark Kopian, Dustadore, Muppin Shish, McCorkerin, Fat Produce, Fat 8893, Gorm Lord, missing someone, Dave Burns popped in just to make fun of me. And Meow Mixes. Meow Mixes is already asking questions. So I feel like, Otaku, sup, dude bros? Sup, Otaku? So I'm already feeling like this is going to be a fun, chatty show. As I'm wont to do, when we get to the last Monday of every month, I like to chill it out. So to my harder format of like news block and subreddit plug and gadget block and really trying to go through all these links and all these news articles and me soapboxing about tech and politics. The last Monday of every month is a pajama podcast. I am literally wearing what I slept in. This is my Wild Stallions band shirt. So, you know, like if you followed the musical stylings of Wild Stallions, it's actually one of their tour shirts. You can actually see all of their tour dates on the back of the shirt. I'm a fan of obscure 80s pop culture references. So this one we're going to keep a little bit more chill. We're going to hang out. And I really just want to go wherever the chat wants to take us. I've got coffee. I've got water. We can ramble on. As we know, it's really easy to sidetrack me into some rambling. But this one we're going to keep a little bit more casual, rather than me screaming about FCC regulations. So, McCorkerin 3, this is the appropriate plug. Follow the Wild Stallions. They're literally responsible for saving humanity. Exactly. Their music has brought everyone together, for a new era of harmony and, just with everything that's going on in the world for reals right now. We could do with a little Wild Stallions action. Maybe that's what we need for world peace. Just go and listen to some Wild Stallions. I love it. All right, so thank you everybody for tuning in, and thank you everybody, and especially the replay crew who are catching this after the fact, the audio podcast. There's definitely been a little transition going on with my channel. I'm trying to keep up with some products I've got under embargo that I can't really talk about just yet, and I've still been cranking out videos and reviews, but this last week was my daughter's spring break. I just to kind of catch everybody up on why I've been a little quieter, we decided to hop in the car and road trip, and the big plan, my mom is kind of impossible to surprise with things. The second she gets kind of like a hint of a sniff of a something could be coming, she's sort of dogged in her pursuit of trying to untangle. She's really good at like puzzles and mysteries and things like that. So it was her 60th birthday the week before. And my siblings and I got together and said, hey, we should try and do something fun for mom's 60th. We're still living kind of in the specter of pandemic. And we thought, hey, it would be really fun. Let's get out there and surprise her for her birthday. Because she doesn't really think anything big is going to happen for her 60th. And it's kind of a milestone. It's you know, those decade birthdays, like that's kind of a big deal. So we're getting all this in line, and we talked to my dad like, hey, we want to try and surprise her. So a couple weeks before the big day where we're all supposed to arrive, we get a message from my dad saying, hey, because your mom doesn't think anything special is going to happen for her 60th, she wants to drive out and visit you in California. And so that would have thrown a huge wrench in all of our plans. So we formulated another plan where Marie, Lex, and I told her, hey, we're going to come out and visit. It's Lex's spring break. We moved around a few things. This is going to be great. We can only stay for a long weekend, but we thought it would be fun to celebrate your birthday. And then also we'd be able to jump on an Easter egg hunt. We could dye Easter eggs and have a lot of fun there. So she loves it. Dad's super happy because, like, when my mom kind of gets an idea for something, it's like you can't really talk her out of it. But if we go to her, she loves to host. And this also means she's not going to be upset if her house isn't host ready. You know what I mean? Like, if like, the beds aren't set up and everything's super picturesque and she hasn't done all the cleaning. Awesome. So we get there, and we get there early in the morning, but then my siblings are flying in. So, unfortunately, they couldn't get in until pretty late in the evening. Like, their plane was supposed to land at, like, 8:45 at night. Okay, so, we're there in the afternoon. We spend a lovely day with her. We grab a little lunch. She's catching up with Lex. Lex is running around her house. It's really great. It's really picturesque. At, like, 8 o'clock, my dad fakes a work emergency, like, oh no, I've got to do this thing, I've got to head to the office, we need to ship off this really sensitive widget, and I'm gonna have to jump out real quick. That entire day, whenever I go back to New Mexico, I have like sinus issues and allergies and things. I can always count on at least a day where I'm kind of like dried out but then also irritated, and thankfully I managed just a minor bloody nose. Super gross. TMI. Y'all didn't need to know that. It's a part of the story. So my dad bows out for a work emergency, and I'm kind of like blowing my nose, and it's really gross. And I kind of fake this, you know, like, I just don't think, you know what's really going to help? We're here in New Mexico. Let me just run out to the drugstore, and let me see if I can grab a neti pot. Just something, I need to kind of clean out what's going on up here. And I'm laying it on pretty thick. But my mom is spending time with Lex, so she's not really paying attention to that. Excuse me, yeah, that was gross. So I bow out because my sister and her husband and my brother and his fiance are all landing at the same time. So we've got to like coordinate different vehicles to pick people up. We can't fit everybody in one car. My dad's out there, I'm out there, and then it takes them like an hour to deplane. So my mom is sitting there with my daughter at like 9 o'clock at night going, where is her husband and where is her son? What's going on? So we finally get everybody back
to the house, and my dad goes walking in through the garage. So it's me, my brother, my sister, their significant others, and we all go scurrying to the front door. We close the garage. We wait. I mean, it's just like a minute. Like, we're really excited at this point because we finally gotten everyone there, and we still don't think my mom has any idea. So my dad goes walking in, and literally like 30 seconds later, we ring the doorbell. He's walking by the front door, and he's looking at his phone like real serious. Oh, I need to do... He's trying to prep his camera so he can try and shoot some video, but he's really trying to lay it on thick and like, oh, Yvonne, can you go get the front door? And my mom gets mad because he's standing right there, and she's snuggled up with my daughter. So she's like, you want me to get up out of the living room and walk all the way over to the front door when you're standing by the front door? And they almost have a fight. And so she finally is convinced to go get the door. And my wife and my dad scurry to like get cameras ready. So she's like trying to unlock the deadbolt and it sticks. And she's complaining. You can hear she's like actively frustrated. She opens the door and there are all of her kids yelling surprise. And she literally does like the hands to face, spins around in a circle, is looking all over the place. She can't believe it. We blew her mind. It's maybe the only time we've ever been able to pull off a surprise for my mom. So it was maybe the most joyous road trip of recent memory in a life, as we kind of figure out the new post-pandemic, what we're going to all have to do. It was really a kind of a beautiful moment. And then from there, we were all together for a couple days celebrating Easter, and we took my daughter to the aquarium, and we went out to a fancy meal. It was really nice. So it was a lot of driving. It was like 3.5 days of driving to spend 2.5 days for my mom on her birthday, but it was totally worth it just to get that look on her face. It was really pretty special. Gormlord, she knew. She's just a good actor. I'm willing to entertain that this one might have actually been the surprise. I think we might have actually landed this one. Like, I kind of know when my mom is doing the, oh, you got me. She's kind of, she's kind of deliberate about stuff like that. But yeah, she kind of had an idea. She knew something was up. This one was, like, the noise and the number of people brought out, like, a panic response at first. Like, I don't know what's going on here. What just happened? And, there aren't going to be too many more decades where we can do that to her heart. So it was good that we got her while she's still, like, strong and healthy. I feel like this one we kind of got. Yeah, and JMX Warrior, it was incredible. It really was amazing. So, I'm very, very grateful. And especially that my brother and my sister were all able to work together on this. There were so many jokes. Like, we were talking to my dad about, like, Rockford Files shenanigans and Ocean 11 style, like, misdirections. It was like a big family magic trick to get us all to that spot. But yeah, apologies for everyone saying, you know, like I had to talk about my nasal issues. So, but if those of you who are like me and suffer from seasonal allergies and are, you know, somewhat sensitive to things like animal and pet dander, this podcast not sponsored by Neti Pots, but go check one out. So that was my week. That was our spring break. We got to spend some time out in New Mexico. We kind of ate our way across Albuquerque because, you know, it's our home food. It's our comfort food. And then we hit the road. We took our time coming back. But it's always a thing, you know, like, if we're going to talk a little bit about tech and bandwidth and rural broadband and things like that, it is one of the challenges. Whenever we make that run, I always feel like I could be shooting so much more, but when I put the videos together and I edit them up and I'm ready to upload, if I'm trying to put a 4K video up on rural broadband, it can take a day and a half to upload that video if I'm not constantly babysitting it. I know we still see, you know, cable advertises 10 megabit per second uploads. Not always sustained, especially when we're going through rural New Mexico. Not great. So I was very happy. We did a stream from the hotel room for Best of Our Week. And again, we weren't even in Albuquerque proper yet. And TK and I were able to stream. The OnePlus 10 Pro worked a champ. From the last time that we had driven through the Southwest to this time, we're starting to see a bit more spread on at least just a bit more backhaul going to LTE. So TK fired up the stream, and my selfie camera, the lighting was horrible. Because I was in the hotel room, and there's just this like direct ray of sunshine just smashing me in the face. And the one, it's not fair to the OnePlus 10 Pro selfie camera, but didn't look great. That was really challenging lighting. But that actually held the stream. So I was really encouraged. The upload speed over rural New Mexican 5G was faster and more consistent than the hotel Wi-Fi paying for the ultra-fast broadband. So baby steps. Like, that one we can call progress. So if you want, you can catch it. It was a shorter show, but we streamed it on the Friday before. So that was Best of Our Week. I forget what episode number, if it was 65 or 66, but it was, it was a great field test. And, the entire time I was out on the road, where is my OnePlus? I think my OnePlus is over there. I have too many phones on my desk and I gotta be really careful because there are a few that I can't hold up just yet. Ha ha! Embargoes. The Moto came in clutch, and the OnePlus 10 Pro was a fantastic travel companion. Very sort of unconventional use for how I normally review stuff, but it was pretty good. yeah, Fat 8893. Never mind resort Wi-Fi. Try watching it in a rural area with no 4G coverage, and that's what. That's what's kind of the problem. There are whole stretches, and they're like towns. Like, you're driving through a town, you're getting some signal, but it's not very fast, and it's definitely not consistent. So I was really encouraged because, you know, like as Dave Burns is saying here in the chat, the OnePlus 10 Pro is a garbage phone for garbage phone nerd wannabes. See, it's part of the joke, if anyone's not familiar with one Mr. Dave Burns, because he has a OnePlus 9 Pro, and he actually does kind of like OnePlus. And McCorkerin 3, there we go. So I'm catching up in my chat here. Have you updated your V60 yet? And I have. LG V60, rockin' Android 12, we should definitely talk about that a little bit. I don't know, it seems like in the chat right now, I'm getting a lot of questions about OnePlus 10 Pro, and a lot of folks who have been commenting on Android 12 for the V60. So we could definitely focus on that. And in fact, 8893, I remembered the stream you did with your OnePlus 10 Pro. It was impressive. Yeah, it was really good. Gormlord. Hey, maybe your camera accidentally tips downward. It happens. I'm like flying by the skin of my teeth. There are so many videos that I'm trying to put out. Like this afternoon on the YouTube channel, I'm going to have kind of it's not a review, but it's an editorial on what it was like using the OnePlus 10 Pro, hitting this road trip, kind of my first impressions. That's going to go out today, and then I'm scrambling to catch up. I still haven't gotten back to the Duo 2 because the updates on the Duo 2 have been phenomenal. I still haven't gotten back to the Pixel 6 Pro. It's running better than it ever has. This phone is such a solid Google example of a daily driver premium tier phone. Like, there's so many things that I want to catch up on, and I really don't think I can do it all in video. Like, I'm literally maxing out every workday to try and keep up with some of the most fun stuff I've gotten to play with in a while, and stuff from last year. So I really want to be doing that, the follow-ups on phones from 2021. The OnePlus 9 Pro, after a few updates, has been flipping phenomenal. So it's difficult because I'm really stoked about everything that's happening here. But I do want to put it out. I mean, before we get into V60 and for OnePlus 10 Pro, the Moto was such a clutch travel companion. I don't really travel with laptops anymore, though I will sometimes pack a laptop dock. Ready 4 is absolutely stunning. It really is like the next step. It's the next evolution over Dex. So you plug in your phone and you get options for what you want to do with it. And you can go desktop mode, or you can go, media, video calling. I mean, it's so well polished. It's so well laid out. And we were in Arizona in a hotel room, and you're going through the channel guide. And not only is it tough to kind of find something to watch when you're traveling with a little kid, like, Lex has grown up in a world where she's never had to watch just what's available, right? She is a generation that only knows video on demand. I demand this video and it will play for me. That's her experience with consuming content. And so we're going through the channel, and like, not only is there nothing really on for her, like, we go through the Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel and stuff. Some of it's just not age appropriate. You know, it's like they were playing older stuff in the afternoon than what we really wanted her to watch. And then you fire it up and it's like, my daughter is also not grown up with commercials. Like, trying to explain to her, you know, like, commercials are advertising and this is going to interrupt your show. And, you know, when they show you toys on the commercial, those toys aren't always as cool as the commercial tries to make them out to be. And so we spend maybe 10 minutes just kind of scanning through. I get the phone. I get ready for. I have my HDMI adapter. Thankfully, the TV has an open HDMI plug. I pop it in. I switch the input. And then she watches whatever she wants. And it was seamless. It was so easy. I can't say enough nice things about products that try to expand the use on a phone. So here's a phone streaming high quality content. Again, just on hotel Wi-Fi, the download speeds were perfectly adequate to stream 1080p video. And she got to pick exactly what she wanted. She picked Spidey and Friends on Disney Plus, and then we were good. Marie and I were just kind of unpacking around the hotel room. I went and grabbed some sandwiches. She was just super chill. She was such a great traveler. As a six-year-old, you know, she can be kind of a high-energy Tasmanian devil, but she's locked in her car seat reading books and playing road games with us and listening to music, and it was awesome. In the hotel room, she was just chill. Chilling out with some Spidey and Spidey and pals, Spidey and friends. I don't remember what the little kid version of Spider-Man on Disney Plus is. So, yeah. I really like where maybe a OnePlus is better for some of the camera stuff, especially fun camera tech. The Moto is just something else for mobile productivity. Content, work, desktop mode, video streaming, video calling. I can't really say enough nice things about the Moto Edge Plus. It's one of those phones that feels very reliable for all of the stuff that Moto claims it can do. So, let me get this out of the way here. All right, behind on the chat. Hold on. There's a lot going on in the chat. All right. So a couple people are asking, is there anything new with Screen Plus with the LG V60? Unfortunately, I have not tried it, but I might be able to on the stream, just kind of plug it in. The last major update it brought like proper Screen Plus. Screen Plus is LG's flavor of a desktop mode. And again, it's one of the reasons why the V60 is kind of going out as one of the last true blue sort of tank all-rounder productivity phones. It's got stylus support. It's got dual display support. It's got great cameras. It's got a headphone jack. It's got a huge battery. It's got a memory card. I mean, there really isn't going to be another phone like this ever again, especially at the premium tier where it's more about cutting features out of our phone. So I could try plugging it in and we can kind of poke around, but I might not be able to screen share. I had to break down my second camera setup, so I don't have that up and running right now. Q3 Becker. Steve is also saying, I'm way more interested in the V60's Android 12 update. Cup of cash, but the fingerprint sensor is still too slow. I just can't recommend the Pixel 6 Pro. So I feel it's always going to be a conversation about pros and cons. The fingerprint sensor on my Pixel 6 Pro is functional. Like, it's way better than, say, some of the in-displays from last generation. It's more consistent, even though it's not as fast. And I would say someone who is looking at that Pixel-grade camera experience, you've got to kind of move pros and cons around. I can tell someone, like, oh, hey, go pick up an IQ 9 Pro if you want the absolute bestest in-display fingerprint sensor. I would not recommend Samsung in that conversation either. If that's really the thing that you want, the best or the fastest in-display fingerprint sensor, then there is a solution for that that works really well. It's this phone with the racing stripes right here. But if someone's coming to me and they say, hey, what I really like is this kind of camera performance, or I'm really into these types of calling features, again, I don't think the Pixel gets enough love for that kind of software. And those are the pros and cons. Like, those, you know, you've got to pick the features that you want in this area, and it's okay if you have to compromise some features in another area. And I think saying a phone is a no-go just because of one thing is kind of disingenuous. It's not, we're not really listening to people when they say, I like doing this on a phone. Well, this phone does it great, but you shouldn't buy it because a feature you didn't say you cared about is going to not be as good. And that's where I think we techies get into trouble. Like, we start gatekeeping unintentionally. Dave Burns. And the OnePlus 9 Pro is also bad, and I hate using mine, which is why I haven't switched yet, so I can late the hate, just hate. That's healthy, right? and I know there's going to be this trend. We've seen some other bigger YouTubers like, oh, this phone is a deal breaker. You should not buy it. And then I gave it a second chance after an update, and it got better. And it's frustrating to me because all of the phones that I've been using have all gotten better with some updates. Some phones update better and more consistently, but many are still bug fixing and patching way better than when we see that initial embargo review. So I was talking with Tank Girl, Miriam, on her podcast, and she was talking OnePlus 10 Pro. And she had the OnePlus 10 Pro just a little before I got mine. And she was like, oh, and this was faster, and the shutter button's more responsive, and this has been better. And I was like, hey, when was the last time you picked up a OnePlus 9 Pro? Because a lot of these things that you're talking about were improved after the embargo week that we had the OnePlus 9. And she was like, oh, I'm pretty sure, like, I haven't picked it up since the first OTA. And you're like, a lot has changed since then. So when like, a much, 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 much bigger YouTuber deigns to revisit a phone after panning it hard, I don't know, I just wish that kind of consistency was a bit more apparent, you know? Like, we've got platforms to sort of regularly talk about this stuff, but the only time you get news on an update is One UI or iOS. And then there's a flurry of Samsung clickbaity, oh, this update is supposed to fix the battery life. And you're like, did it fix the battery life? You could use it and tell us, but instead you just wrote a headline about what it's supposed to do. Because I gotta say, I really wasn't impressed with the early updates on the S22. Did not fix core systemic issues with that hardware. But here I'm like, I can pick up a OnePlus 9 Pro, and boy howdy, does this thing run circles around comparably priced Samsungs, right? Especially right now if you get the OnePlus 9 Pro on sale. But I digress. Oh, some chat about the Velvet. Barry, I love it. So what you're saying, the Moto was ready for hotel environments. I think it's still such an awkward name for that feature, but man, does it not have a whole bunch of puns. Yes, Barry, it was ready for my daughter's demanding media consumption needs. From Snorkel. So this is what's kind of curious. Your experience with the Moto seems so different from the mainstream's reviews of it on many sites, hardly any of which mention the desktop mode capability. They mostly seem to call it a mediocre device, not worth the flagshipy price. How do we define a flagship? I am so tired of this idea that phones can only be one thing. When you spend more than $400 on a phone, it decreases the number of consumers who might be considering that phone. And when you start spending more than $400 on a phone, to justify that price, you really got to look at specific use. Excuse me, I'm going to have some coffee burps here. I'm really trying to caffeinate. And so my philosophy is, and my bias is, as the price climbs higher, there should be diminishing number of people interested in that phone. It should almost be like a perfect, graph of meeting to this point. And as we look at those higher prices, we should be increasingly critical of the features advertised by that manufacturer, and we should be increasingly interested in who is the right fit for that device. And let me get my OnePlus, because this is going to be weird to talk about without the prop. So this is my OnePlus 10 Pro, and this is my Moto. These are both roughly in the same price tier. The Moto is going to be a little bit more expensive now, but it comes with significantly more storage. And the OnePlus 10 Pro is going to be a little bit cheaper, but it comes with like kind of the bare minimum amount of built-in storage that you would expect. But I think these are both extremely competitive devices in the $900 to $1,000 price tier. And I would genuinely not recommend both of these phones to the same consumer asking me about upgrading their phone. Like, just because they're in kind of the same price envelope doesn't mean they have the same experience to offer. In fact, they're about as radically different an experience as one could imagine for spending the same amount of money. So it's kind of like $1,000 truck versus $1,000 sort of sporty roadster, right? That's kind of what we're looking at. So if someone comes to you and says, I need a flagship automobile, and you go, you should buy a Honda. A Honda sedan is the best flagship automobile. And they go, but no, I need to haul lots of heavy things. And then you say, but that's not what average drivers do. You should only buy the Honda. You're talking past that person. Someone says, hey, I'm doing a whole bunch of productivity stuff. Moto. Moto or Note 22. If someone's saying, hey, I want to shoot really fun things on the camera and use crazy slow motion and edit videos, and then I really want the best possible screen on a phone, OnePlus 10 Pro. That's the kinds of conversations we should be having. So for Snorkel, I have to be really careful because my experiences are leaning towards that kind of a conversation. Those are the people I want to talk to. I don't want to talk to so-called techies that only view the phone market in one vertical and only by price and by calling things flagship or mid-ranger. I only want to have conversations with people that are interested in looking at the different categories. And we don't have this problem with desktops or with laptops. You know, I go into laptop conversations and it's really easy to say, hey, this is a slim and portable. This one's for excellent battery life. This is a gaming laptop. This is a mobile workstation. This is a super durable, toughbook, first responder kind of machine. We understand this entire spectrum and spread of different product categories. So I'm trying to do the same thing with phones because I think that's the only fair way to talk about phones. And I think it's sad that doesn't seem very common. You know, you get a mainstream tech reviewer and they look at the price and they look at the SoC and they show you the Geekbench score and then they're kind of done because they're still only going to recommend you buy the most popular product because people don't do things on their phones, which is patently not true. Sorry, I went off on... And Barry, yeah, spotting my IQ 9 Pro there.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet?
is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale. Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
From Kappa Cash also saying, that's not actually my opinion, Juan, that's what they're saying. It's frustrating because I think it's more fun to dig into the nooks and crannies, but I'm kind of like that with everything. You know, if you've got like a media catalog, like I'm going through music streaming services and it's like, man, I want to find obscure stuff that I've never heard before. I'm really not the guy who only wants to keep doing the same thing that I've always been doing. So if it's with a phone, I'm always looking at like, what can I do that's new and different? Because I want to get more use out of these increasing prices. I don't want to get a phone and do the exact same thing I did with my old phone. Why would I do that? So it's frustrating because that's where I think we're losing the conversation on Android. When it comes to iPhones, it's the fashion flex. Like, you can show off very easily that you spent a lot of money on a phone, and that seems to make people really excited from like the standpoint of showing off the right label on a really expensive purse. No one cares. No one cares that you spent a lot of money on an Android. Androids are always going to look like the cheap alternative to an iPhone. And especially with the way that Samsung plays games, like, yeah, there's another price cut on Samsung phones happening right now. Like, go to Amazon, and I think, another $200 just got cut off the Note 22, and $100 got cut off the S22. Samsung has zero confidence in the current sales numbers of their phones. They're wrecking the perception of their brand. Prices are cratering. Resale prices plummet. No one cares. I get it. You know, like, you've got some guys that are really good about, hey, this is the flex. Nobody cares. Go pull out a Note 22 in public, and no one's going to be, wow, that person spent over $1,000 on his phone. That's an expensive phone. They must make lots of money. No, they're going to look at your watch isn't the right shape. Your phone has a weird stick that comes out of it. Nah, that's probably one of those cheap phones, like a cheap Android phones that helps old ladies like poke through notes on their screen. The general consumer perception is way off for how much these things cost because they don't understand the branding. They don't understand the price performance. If it's an Android land, you've got to have a merit. You've got to have a reason why you spent more on that phone. And for me, it's capability. If it's gaming capability, we can spend more in that direction. If it's media consumption and great speakers and a beautiful screen, we can spend more money in that direction. If it's hardcore productivity and stylus support and desktop modes, well, I mean, we've got even a phone like the V60, which is a little long in the tooth, is still rocking my socks as a daily driver workhorse productivity device. So that's the game, at least the game from my perspective. Right, McCorkran. I mean, Samsung is literally facing a class action lawsuit, but let's complain about the fingerprint sensor, which works perfectly fine on the Pixels. Again, it's fine, and I have no faults with someone who has higher expectations at a higher price. If the fingerprint sensor really is a deal breaker for you, I would recommend looking at other products that have better fingerprint sensors. I can pick up a $300 Poco, and the side-mounted fingerprint sensor is insanely quick. I can pick up the iQ 9 Pro, and the huge increase, like the new Qualcomm Max fingerprint sensor on this, is enormous. And I love, like, I've been showing it off to people. I need to charge this right now. But my dermatologist is really into phones and stuff, and he's got a Pixel 6. And I showed him, like, here, go ahead and train it on my iQ. And he did this, and then it was trained. And then I turned it off and I had him unlock. And it was that immediate. And he did it again. And he did it again. And he did it again. And then he tried moving it to other corners just to see if it was a graphic. And you're like, no, the surface area of this phone is huge. That almost sold him on importing an iQOO 9 Pro. So I'm not trying to say, like, people shouldn't care about fingerprint sensors. I'm just saying there is an audience of people I'm going to recommend the Pixel to. People who care about direct first-party software support from Google, people who care about calling features, and people who want the most effortless point-and-shoot camera experience. That's a Pixel consumer. And that Pixel consumer is just going to have to deal with a fingerprint sensor that's fine. If someone's telling me, like, hey, the only thing I really care about is getting into my phone as efficiently and as quickly as possible, I'm going to say, check out the Moto. Check out the Sony, check out the iQOO 9 Pro, check out a Xiaomi. These are devices with the most immediate and direct biometric unlocking that you can have. It's better than face unlock if you care about the phone being on and usable. So again, it's us doing a better job listening. I feel like that's always going to be the big problem, is we unintentionally gatekeep things and we're not really hearing consumers when they say they want specific kinds of experiences. Way behind. Oh, yeah, we talked about that one, McCorkran. Reuters had a damning article about Samsung and the S22 recently and all of the consumer stuff in South Korea. You know it's a bad look when a news outlet like Reuters is trying to explain graphite and vapor chamber cooling. Consumers, if we're talking average consumers, should never have to worry about what kinds of cooling apparatus is in a daily driver smartphone. But when Reuters is breaking that down to explain to the average news-consuming populace out there how Samsung is cutting corners on their premium-tier phones, that's a real bad look. That is not a good look for a supposed market leader like Samsung. Okay, so here I'm gonna try and there's so much going on with the chat right now, and I'm glad y'all are on board. I do want to spend a little time. I've been poking around. I unfortunately have not had the mainline time to put my SIM card back in the V60 and really use it. Actually, let me make sure that it's charged. I've got 70% on this guy. So I'm keeping this really simple for now, but I really do need to spend some time poking around with it. One of the things that I'm a little concerned about, some of the iterative updates on LG have had some funky little gremlins with CPU power. So when we went from Android 10 to Android 11, there was a fingerprint sensor bug where anytime you would activate the in-display fingerprint sensor, it would lock all of your CPU cores at 100%. And that nukes your battery life. Like, it destroys your standby time when the screen is off. So I'm a little anxious about some of the updates in Android 12. And this is something I want to talk a little bit more about for some of these other phone reviews. It might be worth going into your developer settings and checking on premium tier phones if there's a setting for window blur. To me, this is one of those aesthetic software toggles that doesn't bring a lot of benefit to daily operation. But every time you engage and the blur effect kicks on, that is additional power draw coming directly off your GPU. It looks pretty. Again, if you care about that kind of fluid interaction, UI, pretty aesthetic, then cool, leave it on. But understand that that's additional power draw on a feature that doesn't really improve the capability of the device. It's only aesthetic. And the same thing is happening here. Well, there we go. So, okay, but NVIDIA, let me turn off my NVIDIA blurring here. It was focusing on me and then blurring the phone. So there you go, window blur, because I'm using an NVIDIA GPU on my desktop. But when I slide down, and you can see, as soon as I hit that notification shade, and the phone screen blurs out. This is a more power costly effect coming from the GPU. And it's been very prevalent. Like the OnePlus 10 Pro had it out of the box. The other BBK phones have had it out of the box. Funnily, the Moto did not. There's not even an option for it in your developer settings. So you unlock your developer settings and you go in and you look for something like window blur. And you might have to dig in because it's called different things on different phones. And it's now toggled on the LG V60. So that's something that I think I'm going to delete. Like, I really want to keep the V60 as a more streamlined, focused, workhorse kind of product. That's one of those things where this is now a phone on an aging battery, two operating systems in from its original launch operating system. This is additional load that I don't want to put on the phone. I want the phone to function with newer software, but more like how it came out of the box. And especially where the V60 was an absolute screamer for its time, it's been aging really well and keeping up with Snapdragon 888s, Snapdragon 8 Gen 1s, just because it's got a huge battery, a 1080p display, it doesn't even have 120 hertz refresh, nothing is slowing this phone down. The SoC is operating at like maximum capacity, and you can still get 2 days of runtime out of heavy to moderate use. So that's one of the tricky things, is like whenever we get one of these new operating system updates, it's also like we've got to kind of plan out when we get the bug fix. Android 12 has been much better behaved than Android 11. So when we were doing like Android 9 to Android 10, that was really clumsy. I had really poor experiences going from 10 to 11, where I needed to just completely hard reset, nuke the phone, take it back to pure stock, and not restore. Like set up the phone completely fresh, not from a backup. And so far, fingers crossed, knock on wood, going from Android 11 to Android 12 hasn't been as poor an update as going from 10 to 11 was. So I'm hoping we can stick with that. I still got to play with the dual display. I haven't even plugged it in to see if there's like a firmware update, which I'd imagine there would be. So far, the only thing that's been a little bit of a bummer, I don't know if I'll even be able to show this. If we go into manual video, yeah, so if we go into manual video, are you going to focus? Yeah, there we go. Why am I so washed out on that? You'll notice I've set up the resolution settings and it has HD, full HD, and 4K. So unfortunately, we seem to have lost 8K video in the manual modes. So I don't know if people out there were shooting a lot of 8K on their V60s. That one is a bit of a bummer. Whenever we get a big software update and then we lose like a little piece of functionality, I think people are right to be frustrated when we lose a feature or a setting. You still have 8K video full auto, but we no longer have 8K video in the manual mode. And that one I think is worth a little bit of teeth gnashing or complaining. I'm a 4K 60 guy. For me, I think once we got to 4K quality, the quality of the video from our phones is looking great. And I think there is radical diminishing returns when we look at the amount of information that you save going from 4K to 8K, but we're using tiny little phone sensors and tiny little lens elements. I'm not sure we're properly resolving much more information 4K to 8K. But what really gets me excited now is 4K at increasingly higher frame rates. So especially like Sony's and OnePlus, the OnePlus 10 Pro shooting 4K 120, that's my jam. Keep me at 4K. I'm fine just hanging out at 4K, but if you can give me 4K 240, I'll do that. Let's rock. So for me, shooting 4K 60 has always been my default on the V60. So I didn't even notice that 8K was gone. I went into my manual video, I just poked around, I was trying to see if there were any additional audio settings or audio controls, and I saw I was still set up for 4K 60, so I said I was fine. And someone actually pinged me on Reddit and was like, hey, did they remove this feature from your phone? And so, yeah, I had to dig in there and be like, oh, that is a little bit of a bummer if you were into 8K. So, yeah, that was pretty funny. From Fat8893, I still don't see the need for fancy animations. Just give me a simple, straightforward swipe. I'm pretty practical when it comes to stuff like that. I don't mind pretty stuff and pretty transitions. But when I was reading up on window-level blurs, that one actually did kind of make me a little, seeing how it does seem to kick on your GPU more aggressively. And it's maybe not so bad on a two-year-old SoC, but look at some of the conversations we're having about power draw on some of these newer features. A Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 can consume a significant amount of your battery doing things that are kind of normal. When you let that CPU or GPU go, I mean, we're talking almost laptop, ultra-portable laptop tier power draw on a battery that's like half the size of something that we would put into a laptop. So that one to me is absolutely worth. If you like to tinker and kind of dig around in your settings and really customize your device, give it a try. Turn off window level blur, reboot your phone, and see if you notice where and when those blurring effects might have kicked on. You know, as you're going through your notification shade, as you're pulling up picture in picture, as you have transitions that happen with blurring, see if it bothers you. Because I feel like a lot of people really won't notice, and maybe it only saves you like a percentage point on your battery use. But genuinely right now, anything that helps us get better screen on time is going to be an okay effort to take on your part. Aditya, wait, wow, I never noticed that I've turned off that stuff. Apparently my home screen immediately blacks out when I touch the notification bar. Well, and also because Aditya, I think you're on a Sony, and I think Sony still keeps a pretty clean stock experience on that. I don't think they're turning on a lot of pretty fancy stuff. You know what, I should pull out my Xperia 1 Mark II. I honestly don't know if the One Mark II on Android 12 is messing around with stuff like prettier aesthetic stuff. Oh, yeah. So McCorkran's saying there is a firmware update on the dual display right now after the regular update. I've got to grab it. The last time I took my V60 out, I had it in my bumper case, and I haven't taken it out of the bumper case. I'm trying to be extremely careful. The weak spot on the V60 is the USB-C port. So I'm trying not to pop it in and out of the dual display case unless I really want to use the dual display case. And then I try to leave it in the dual display case for as long as I can until I need to put it back in a bumper case. Let's see. From Dave Burns, do you think the Android 12 performance cost dropped that kind of 8K video control loss? I don't know. So when we talk about smartphones and camera tech, there's a lot of different things happening with the extra cores and hardware on an SoC to facilitate improved camera performance. LG was already doing something kind of funky. If you remember, what was it? LG versus the V60 was set up against the Galaxy S20. So the Galaxy S20 did 8K video at 24 frames per second, but LG advertised 4K at 26, which is a very unconventional frame rate. But their explanation of 8K 26 was phones don't keep a perfectly regulated clock for frame rate. And we know that operating at this resolution for any sustained period of time is going to result in some skipped or dropped frames. So we say this is the peak and it's going to hang out at 26 for the majority of your filming. But even if we take like a 10% hit to dropped frames, like one out of every 10 frames you lose, we would still be roughly in 8K 24. I feel like that was a good play because I had tons of dropped frames on my Galaxy S20s, 4K 60 and 8K 24. So we kind of know the Snapdragon 865 was really being driven to a high limit, shooting 4K 60 and shooting 8K, especially because that was also the generation where we saw a number of phone manufacturers step up to higher resolution sensors. You know, the 64 megapixel sensor on the V60, the Galaxy S20 only had 12, but it was a much larger sensor size, and it could clear data off the sensor more aggressively. And then also the S20 had that 64 megapixel zoom sensor. So we were really playing with transitioning into bigger and higher performance camera sensors. I think we were at the limits of what the 865 could properly achieve. So with the subsequent updates, you know, we talk about what's changed in Android 11 and what's changed in Android 12. We've seen some performance hits because of this newer software, but I'm still not entirely sure what about the manual mode has changed. So it's my hypothesis that 8K on an LG V60 is likely one of those much more efficiently compressed types of video experiences. And if you go into manual mode and you tell the V60, I want you at your highest bit rate, I want you at your fastest frame rate, I want you at your highest resolution, that there's also maybe an expectation that a two-year-old phone battery is also going to have difficulty keeping up with that. So rather than deliver a poor experience with more dropped frames and more video degradation or clips that totally fail and you don't even save the video, LG engineers might have said, hey, let's just cut it. So that's my guess. I don't have any particular insight. I actually don't chat with LG PR that much anymore. So I don't even know who to reach out to see if there's a clear answer as to why LG pulled it. But again, it was 8K at its very beginning. LG's 8K was better than Samsung's 8K, but I also don't feel 8K is the thing. I think higher resolution at faster frame rates find a balance on 4K. And if you can keep improving 4K video, I think that is a much better consumer benefit. Going from 4K to 8K, I think it's radical diminishing returns. Like, it really doesn't look or feel, or it's not that much better. But if I look at 1080p video to 4K, oh man, that is clear as day a consumer benefit. And I've been shooting 4K for all of my family videos easily. I mean, like, since what? Like Galaxy S20, LG V series, like V10, V20. All of my daughter's life has been documented in 4K. So it's pretty intense. And Barry, yeah, also saying, I have to admit, I am happy with 4K 120. If you haven't played with a OnePlus or a Sony shooting 4K 120, you are missing out on the easiest way to make your family movies look ridiculously cinematic and at a clarity that it's jaw-dropping. I am not interested in super fast burst rate potato quality 720p slow motion. It's fun to use once or twice, but I'm never going to put that in one of my family videos. That's not how I want to capture a memory. But I shot, my daughter's school did a fundraiser where they set up this obstacle course, and I shot it mostly 4K 120. And I've got this one shot. There are these little inflatable like tunnels that they had to crawl under and pop out of. And I set it up and I'm slowly backing away while shooting these kids running through these tunnels. And my daughter like pops out of one and she's like standing upright. And it's like this superhero moment. This little boy is like tripped in front of her and she like sidesteps him. And it's the clarity is insane. Like, you can see the hair flowing in the wind as she's like making this move. And of course I set it to Daft Punk, so the music is on point too. But that was huge. Like, that shot from a OnePlus 10 Pro kind of saves how I felt about the OnePlus 10 Pro. When you can play with something like that, it's incredible. And it's a shame because, again, like, I feel like tech reviewers, you know, mention it. Oh, and it can shoot 4K at 120 frames per second, but what average consumers are going to use that? instead of just admitting, like, this is a ridiculously killer feature that sets OnePlus apart from a Samsung, you can't even give them that? That's ridiculous. If you see this footage, and you play with this footage, and you edit this footage, it's awesome. It is so good. Again, I would highly recommend playing with that. A DTNL. Honestly, if your phone can't do 4K 120, why even use that camera? Like, keep that peasant nonsense to yourself and stay 7 feet away from me and my chai latte with 3 pumps of vanilla. I mean, you're joking, but I do kind of feel that way. Again, it's like, why buy an expensive phone if you're not really going to use the features on that expensive phone? Yeah, and also a DTA, dang, 2 extra frames per second for those gamer bros out there. Yeah, it was a weird candid moment from LG. Like, we're purposely cranking this phone up to 26 because we know it's also going to drop frames. So it was pretty crazy. Oh yeah, and Fat8893 saying, I remember when ZTE was first to introduce 8K video that the year earlier, but it was only at 15 frames per second. Yeah, I was trying to remember, who did I... there was one phone manufacturer where I really tried, Vivo. So on the X70 Pro Plus, I'm looking at like the 8K footage versus the 4K footage. There's a little bit of a different crop from the sensor. It's probably not clearing full sensor and shooting 8K, and I'm pixel peeping. Like, I'm zooming in hard, and it was really difficult to see any kind of clarity difference between the two. And like, I'm very positive the Vivo X70 Pro Plus is just an absolutely crazy camera platform, but I didn't feel like shooting 8K brought any significant or noticeable improvement to the quality of the footage. And then it makes it more difficult for the phone to do other things like advanced software stabilization. Like, the phone is working so much harder clearing all that data. So I'm good on 4K. Like 4K 60 is my default for everything. I tend to finish most of my family videos at 4K 30. But even when I'm just shooting on like a pixel can't do 4K 120. But if I'm shooting 4K 60, I can at least half speed or sometimes even squeak it to 1/3 speed if I finish the video at 24 frames per second. It looks great. It looks so good. Always having the capability of going real time into some kind of half or quarter speed slow motion is awesome. It looks so good. That's a pretty good question. Hold on, Gabalette is asking, also, why did we skip 6K? There's nothing wrong with going that half step. If OEMs want to give us higher quality recording, give me 6K 60 without the limitations that 8K imposes on current smartphones. 6K 60 would look real good. But I think we're even having difficulties keeping up with 8K 30. I mean, so 6K 30 would even be a nice kind of quality update on some of these larger sensors. Like, some of the recent improvement over the last year has been on lens quality. We've been seeing better stacked lenses for telephotos. We've been seeing higher quality lenses, faster apertures on main camera sensors. I would say from the V60 to today, in terms of photography, the lens clarity has improved enough that I think going 6K could make a difference if we're talking about people who might be inclined to, like, edit or grade footage. Like, you would maybe want to play with that. You could rock with that. But what's funny is, I'm not sure our current SoCs could really handle 6K 60 reliably. I mean, I'm trying to remember. Let me actually see. Because I haven't even fired up 8K on my OnePlus 10 Pro here. So if I go to video, and I go to 8K... Yeah. Okay. So 8K on the OnePlus 10 Pro knocks me down to 24 frames per second with no options to climb higher. So I can't do 8K 30 on a OnePlus 10 Pro. Yeah, see, I'm not down for that. 24 frame per second video looks awful from a phone unless you can stop it down with some sort of ND filter. If you're shooting 24 frames per second on a phone, especially a phone with a larger image sensor, your shutter speed is so fast that that footage, 24p, looks like a choppy mess. I'm gonna have to fire up, because I want to say the OnePlus 9 was shooting 8K 30. That's gonna be interesting. Let me. I'm booting up my OnePlus 9 Pro now, and we'll check that out. Do do do. Coppa Cash. Heck yeah. Lex was like Captain Marvel emerging out of the tunnel. It's such a baller moment, but it's so epic. We talk about it like, well, I want to shoot more cinematic. You're like, okay, cool. But something like speed ramping footage, Zack Snyder style, with your little kid's obstacle course, that looks cinematic. It's so much fun. And I love that one shot. Even her principal was like running with the kids. She's like down in the corner and she's trying to like crawl through some of these tunnels and stuff. And here comes Lex just emerging. And as soon as she gets around the kid, she does this little like skip step as she gets back into running for the rest of the obstacle course. It's I showed it to my sister and like the family. We watched that one part of the sequence just like three times in a row, back to back to back to back. It was great. I mean, again, I have so much fun playing with that kind of stuff. And it's just frustrating because for years now, we've been listening to techies talk about, oh, but who's going to edit video on their phone? And it's so easy. It's so easy. I'm shooting 4K 120. I can play it back in real time, drop it into a phone editing program, kick it down to 1/4 speed, and then render it right there. I was cutting that obstacle course video at the obstacle course, doing 4K 120 with speed ramps. That's awesome. Who isn't gonna, like, anyone who cares about creating content, like, come on. That's incredible. All right, I've got my OnePlus 9 Pro up. I just want to see, are you really gonna bork on the camera right now? My OnePlus 9 Pro is not launching my camera after I've been saying all these nice things about OnePlus. Yeah, I've got total black screen on my camera. What is going on? OnePlus, are you letting me down? Yeah, see, the phone is on. I can't. Come on. Turn on the camera. It's not turning on the camera. It's black screening on the camera. Let me reboot it real quick. This is going to make me very anxious because I like my OnePlus 9 Pro. All right, we're going to reboot that and get through a couple more comments. Coppa Cash, speaking of, Vivo just announced the X80 Pro, announced in China. I'm going to have to dig that up. That is one of my most hotly anticipated phones of this year. The X70 Pro Plus rocked my socks last year. This thing is just an optics, camera, content creation monster. So anything Vivo does with cameras, I am anxiously excited to see what they might have to say. From a DTNL. So basically, we've been capped at the same frame per second for 8K video for 2 years. Kind of. Again, there were a few. There were some phones that genuinely tried to do 8K 30. And I want to say the OnePlus 9 on Android 11 did 8K 30. But now, it's not letting me launch my camera. So that's not great. Actually, let me see if there's like any other kind of update or something like that. Oh, it's actually asking me to... Oh, I logged out of a whole bunch of things. I had a password scare. So I had to change my password on a whole bunch of phones. I don't know that that would be a problem.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I worked for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for TechAltar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
Yeah, this is great podcasting here. I'm typing in a password on my phone just to get it logged in. So let me see. I've got to verify it's me. Let's do the two-factor. Yes, it's me. Six phone screens just lit up on my desk. And I don't think that would have had an effect on the camera app, but who knows? Let's see. Try again. It's connected to the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi got way faster on Android 12. Saying updates available. I just got a whole flurry of emails. This is so bad. I'm so sorry, folks. And let me see. Okay. So now I'm getting a whole ton of notifications. Okay, I'm going to go to video. I finally have cameras up. Maybe that's weird. Does anyone in here know? Is there something security-wise, like you can't launch a camera on an Android phone if you've changed your Google account password? Yeah, that's strange. Let me do a do not disturb here for a second, too, because it's getting so much stuff. I can't see what's going on the screen. Okay, video. I'm going to go into 8K. Yeah. So the OnePlus 9 Pro still does 8K 30. Ha ha! Yet another little spot where someone on a OnePlus 9 Pro might just want to stick with their OnePlus 9 Pro. That took way too long for me to get there. I'm sorry, that took like two phone reboots and a password. But yes, I was correct. From the ultra wide and from the main sensor, I remember like the first vlog that I shot on the OnePlus 9 Pro was 8K 30. Let me just make sure. So if I do 8K 30, and it does the ultra wide still. So yeah, you can see like even more of my office, and that's 8K 30 from the OnePlus 9 Pro. Man, you know, again, I'm not going to put this on OnePlus because I feel like this is completely endemic with Samsung and with a number of these other manufacturers, where it just feels like we're kind of in a holding pattern. We're not able to kind of like push the limits on a feature like video, while we're still sort of in this mid space of like what's average, but these are phones that cost like $1,000. Yeah, it's funky. It's really funky. But again, that's also why it's even more critically important to highlight when we get a feature that's genuinely different. And you know, a Sony Xperia Pro I is obviously a hyper niche product, but the people who might be interested in what that phone does well need to know how it's a niche product. Like they need to know, like this is a phone with a variable aperture, and this is a phone with a larger image sensor, and it can clear data insanely fast. It can shoot 4K 120. Those are the kind of things that help someone make a purchasing decision for their own specific needs. Dustadori is heading out to Costco, so have a lovely time at Costco. I always buy way too much stuff when I'm at Costco. Dave Burns, even more proof that the OnePlus 9 Pro is garbage and OnePlus can't do anything right. So Dave, I would take you seriously with those jokes if you also threw in a mention about how OnePlus betrayed you. Betrayed you. DTNL. Beans 54321. That's his password. No, it's the same password I keep on my luggage. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. DTNL, Dave must be feeling very validated right now. McCorkran3 saying, Windows Central was saying a new Duo would probably arrive sometime in 2023. I would imagine, how do I want to phrase this sort of diplomatically? The Duo 1, my Duo 2 is over on the shelf right now, but my Duo 1 is over here because I was behind on running updates. So the Duo 1, which had a twist tie stuck to the magnetic portion of it, the Duo 1, we know, just from an engineering standpoint, that this was likely a delayed product, and it was built around a certain SoC. It was built around the Snapdragon 855. And just as all these phones were coming out with the 865 and support for 5G, it made sense that Microsoft kept the 855 in a phone, or in a foldable tablet this radically thin. The Duo is thinner than the camera module on some of these premium tier phones. You can't force another component like a separate radio. The 865 didn't have the radio built into the SoC. So then the Duo 2 comes out, and what's one of the major differences from the 865 to the 888? It's replacing the radio, the modem, as part of the SoC. So it kind of makes sense that you would leapfrog from 855 to 888. The 888 drew more power. It was a thirstier SoC. It didn't run as efficiently as the 865, but you had more space for something that's radically thin, and every single micrometer of where you put components on something like this is going to have a huge impact on the manufacturing of a foldable tablet. I don't see where Microsoft would look at the performance of the 8 Gen 1 and say, yeah, that's what we need in our next folding tablet. I could totally believe that Microsoft engineers, the Surface team at Microsoft, would look at the Duo 2. It's still perfectly performance competitive against current phones rocking the 8 Gen 1 and just ride it out for the rest of this year. Let it go this year. And you know what? Maybe it's okay if we kind of leapfrog SoCs. Hopefully, a next generation TSMC fabbed Qualcomm 8 Gen 2 will deliver a better power performance efficiency curve than the 8 Gen 1. Fingers crossed. It's an entire ecosystem of ARM reference designs, Qualcomm additions for AI and other types of processing, really sort of cleaning up GPU performance, then putting that design through a chip fab like TSMC or Samsung, and then figuring out how to actually put it into a consumer-facing product. I think the Duo 2 is going to be a fine performer for that kind of dual display productivity folding tablet vibe. I don't see it really getting better just because we put in a thirstier, hotter SoC. So, I mean, Windows Central is saying, like, hey, we might not get a Duo 3 until 2023. That kind of makes sense. And then we get to do something really fun with the Duo numbering. Duo 3, 2023. Duo 4, 2024. And I'm hoping that by 2024 or 2025, it's Surface running Windows, not Surface running Android. Fingers crossed. That, to me, would be a really exciting place to take a folding, pocketable Surface. So I hope that's the gig. I hope that's what we see. But I wouldn't be too upset. I love my Duo 2. I didn't take it on this road trip, and I kind of wished I had, just to see, you know, like, hey, I've got this Moto, I'm plugging it into other screens, but I've got this Duo. Am I doing other things on the Duo that I wouldn't have been doing on my regular phones? But I've got to revisit the Duo 2 just because it's been so good on these most recent updates. Unfortunately, I might not be able to get there until we see, like, Android 13 on Duo 2. I'm so swamped trying to keep up with new stuff that's coming out. Yeah, McCorkran 3. I was worried about the 888 thermals with the Duo 2. 8 Gen 1 just draws a ton of power relative to the 855. It's a shame that we couldn't stick with the 865. I really do believe it was because of the radio and modem components that had to be off SoC. CopperCache. This, I would love to see this. Maybe the Surface Duo 3 will rock a MediaTek. I believe Microsoft is going to be very aggressive working with Qualcomm over Windows on ARM. Qualcomm is still probably our best bet for an ARM SoC to drive a laptop-grade experience. So I think Microsoft is going to play nice there. But in my heart of hearts, in my dream of dreams, if I could get a Duo 2 rocking something like the MediaTek Dimensity 8100, oh boy, I'm so anxious to get my hands on an 8100. To me, like, that looks like the absolute perfect power, performance, efficiency combination. It's the core configuration from a Snapdragon 865, 5G components updated for 2022, and it's on a die shrink. So it's fabbed at a smaller, four nanometer process or a 5 nanometer process? Someone please correct me in the comments. But it's a die shrink over the 865. So we get 865 performance at a small power savings over the 865 or the 870. I know that's a lot of numbers and a lot of gobbledygook for people out there, but you look at SoC design, that makes me crazy pants, Twitter pated excited. Pants on head, running around, whooping like a Looney Tunes character. I want that so bad. Ron Guido trying to call me out. If the shelf lights are off behind Juan, does that mean there's something back there where we aren't supposed to see? No, it's for the podcast. I'm always lazy and I don't turn on all my lights. If anything, I'm just being real precious because if my camera drops, you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff on my desk right now that you're not supposed to see just yet. So it's not on the bookshelf. For once, I wasn't dumb enough to put embargo boxes on my bookshelf. Oh, yeah. Barry Johnson, Android 13. So Microsoft is already ahead of the curve on a lot of the things that make Android 12L interesting for tablets. But when we can just get that built properly into Android and it's not custom software from Microsoft, I'm going to be really happy to see that kind of free up some of the resources for the Surface team. But going to Android 13, I think, is the big jump. I was actually kind of hoping that the Surface folks would skip Android 12 and go directly to like 12L or 13 or something like that. On the Duo 1, I would have been fine if they'd skipped 11. Go from Android 10 with all of these customizations and then just jump immediately to 12L. I would have been fine with that. It's interesting to see how these companies are kind of managing their resources and stuff, but it's a Surface. So they're not really interested in making the bestest Android phone. I want to see what they can do to make the best tablet that they can with that Surface aesthetic to it. But yeah, the Duo 2 has been a baller multitasking kind of machine. It's real good. Let me see. Oh, Muppinish. I'm sorry to hear that. Muppinish is one of their back panels on their Duo has been cracked for 5 months now. And I'm sure repairs are super easy on a Duo, right? Like, if you take it to a repair shop, they totally know what that thing is and how to get replacement parts for it, right? It is very anxious. Again, it's why I want to be more critically focused on the audience for each of these things. I love the Duo. In their current state, I prefer dual display over plastic folding screens. That's me. I am point blank telling you my preference. And when it comes to Android, I'm less interested in running one app on a bigger surface on a weird square form factor. I am way more interested in the easiest way to get multiple apps on screen. The Duo is a literal translation of that. It's two screens, so you run one app on each screen. I never mess with multitasking gestures because the hardware is built to directly multitask. I have zero qualms recommending a Duo or a Duo 2, and even a Duo 2 at near full price, right? Like, I paid full price for my Duo 2. I'm not conflicted in the slightest, but that is a tiny demographic of people that I'm extending that recommendation to. You have to know you want stylus support, multitasking, and dual display, then the Duo is the premier solution for that kind of use. Like, nothing touches it. It's awesome. You want to play a game while streaming a video. You want to open up two documents side by side and edit and move back and forth. You want to have options for stylus input, keyboard input, mouse input. It does a reasonably good job of running a display out so you can throw your Duo two-panel display to another monitor or a TV. Like, if that's your workflow and you're a Surface kind of person, you're going to love this. I can't imagine that that's very many people, but I need those few people out there to hear this thing rocks. If you're picking up a Duo and you're like, yeah, but I've got a Pixel 6 and my Pixel 6 has a better camera. Well, like, yeah, you're asking an elephant to climb a tree. You know, you're not judging it on what it does well. You're purposely picking out what it doesn't perform as well as, and then you're trying to make some kind of judgment as to its worth itness for the price. But as soon as you hold something like this and you feel like the engineering that went into giving you two panels of display at a reasonably powerful internals, something this shockingly thin, it's hard just picking up a Fold and going, well, yeah, that's better. It's like, I don't want something that chunky and awkwardly shaped. I want something that's going to be way better at putting two apps side by side and feels like a tiny little notebook. It doesn't feel like two phones stapled together and is double thick when I want to close it. Like, it's a philosophy. And I think we do a really poor job of talking about philosophy. Kappa Cash corrected me. 8100 is 5 nanometers. So it's... So the Snapdragon 865 was a 7 nanometer part. The 8100 drops us down to 5 nanometers, which is still a pretty good die shrink on those types of cores. Oh, McCorkran, I never take my Duo out of the house. It's an indoor cat for me. I still haven't found a great case for my Duo 2. Really, that's the thing that keeps me from really rocking it more out and about. The form factor is so tablety. I got like two clip-on panels. Those were hot garbage. They were so bad. And I would worry that trying to open it all the way out, my Duo 2 is on the bookshelf. I'd be using my Duo 2 as the prop here if it weren't sort of locked up behind me. But the panels clipped onto the back, and when you would open it all the way out, it got in the way of the hinge. So the panels pushed up against each other, against the hinge. You're like, wow, that is a terrible design. That's going to destroy someone's Duo if they try to open it quickly to single screen use. That's real bad. I didn't love the OtterBox design for being so big and chunky. And I might just have to get like the Microsoft Charge, the Stylus Charge bumper. It's not good and it's really expensive. I still wish someone had given us, like, a good sort of wedge. Give me a thin bumper wedge that stays out of the way of the hinge and that would close kind of around the depth of the camera sensor. But then when you open it up, you've got the same wedge on both sides so the Duo 2 can rest flat and it doesn't wobble on the table because of the camera sensor. I would really like that kind of a design, and I'm not good enough at designing things to like 3D print something like that. I gotta drink some more water and I'm just gonna kinda make an annoying biological noise. So let me mute my mic for just one more second. Okay. feeling a little better now. I'm clearing out with some water. I was drinking a lot of coffee there, so I'm kind of drying myself out. Some folks are talking about, like, yeah, the irony is, like, people understand dual monitors, but dual display phone? Whoa! I love it. But they see a duo, and they want to know how anyone could ever want to two distinct screens to compartmentalize multitasking. I mean, I went in hook, line, and sinker on LG dual display. I love the Duo dual display, and it's just so fast. It really is. I mean, like, I know the Fold does some of that well, but it doesn't do it natively. Not by design, where you open up two apps side by side. And I'm super into that. Like, I really like that. It's a bad habit that I picked up, where now I almost always have something else happening on my phone screen at the same time. If it's like streaming a video and interacting with a chat, I can't have just one thing on my phone screen all the time. It's silly. It really is. But you know, when we talk about getting your money's worth, it's one of those things that I think brings a lot of benefit. Yeah, I'm the best thing about the Duo is that non-tech savvy people stare and ask about it. I've shown off my Duo 1 a lot more than my Duo 2. I just haven't been going out as much. But, you know, like, my cousin, he's like an iPhone guy. Like, he loves his iPhone Pros, even though he doesn't do a ton on his iPhones. But he had a couple friends over at his mom's place, and I was hanging out with them. And what did I have? I had the Duo, and I think I had just something else. It was something kind of funky, like a Xiaomi. So, you know, you pull out the Xiaomi, and it's like, it's a totally normal phone. Yeah, whatever, Android. And so then I pulled out the Duo, and like, oh yeah, but you can't do two things at the same time. And I'm poking around, and I've got the stylus, and I'm jotting notes and stuff. And these are all college-age dudes, and it did not come back to me until the end of the evening. And we're running around with it like, oh wow, and you can prop it up. Oh, look at this. You can even go, oh, Google, single screen. Look, it's one big screen. And like opening it back up and like pulling up apps side by side. And you know what they didn't complain about was like, sometimes the UI stutters. Like, as soon as you showed them like how to open the app drawer on an Android, it was like, oh yeah, you flip it up. Oh, and I can, oh look, you can switch it back and forth. Look at that. Like, it was seconds of instruction to get iPhone users heavy into doing some pretty advanced stuff on the Duo, all because the hardware was like something they had never seen ever before. And again, I feel like techies lose the plot on that. If you were to go into this conversation and just be excited, like, hey, yeah, there's some cool stuff. It's super experimental. Like, this is bleeding edge. So there's a few things that are kind of wonky, but look what it can do. And look at these gestures and look at how it responds to your interactions. And average consumers have zero issues following that. Did any of those guys run out and buy a Duo? No. They're all still rocking iPhones. But for one brief moment, they were holding something that felt radically different than anything they had ever used before. And they understood why someone would pay a premium for that kind of experience. And they got, this is something that would easily replace both an iPhone and an iPad mini. So that value proposition was built into it. And it had stylus support like the Apple Pencil. Like, I didn't have to spell it out for them. They came to all of those conclusions on their own. Techies are sitting back, oh, I'm glad, you know, Duo, I waited until it crashed in price because it wasn't worth it for the price and the money and the SOC and all these other things. I memorized the specs on paper. And you're like, you don't do anything. Like, of course the Duo isn't going to be for you. I watch you use $1,000 phones just to kind of browse through your TikTok, techie. So, yeah. Again, I don't see where people are running into these problems. Oh, I'm so worried that people might be confused. Oh, if this is their first experience, if they pick up a Pixel, I'm so concerned about the consumer experience if there's occasionally some bugs or some gremlins. No, you're not. You're not. You're not concerned about that at all. You just need some of these other products to lose so that you can tell Samsung owners that they're clever and smart for only buying Samsung. And that's how you make more money on YouTube. Can confirm, I'm streaming this on Twitch. Oh, yeah. McCorkin, exactly. TechTubers aren't impressed by dual screens, but take it to a party and people are very much intrigued. And I'm telling you, it's not just dual display. Because like I could take a V60 or a Velvet, and people were interested. Like, there was a curiosity. When someone sees that a Duo is roughly the same depth as the camera lump on the back of their phone, this lights people up. They've never held anything like this before. It's like, it's coming in skinnier than an iPad, which doesn't have a hinge running in the middle of it, and it feels like nothing they've ever handled. And I hate going all Panos Panay. You know, Panos gets like super emotional about the power and the design and all of the people and the blood, sweat, and tears that went into making this product. And we need to enable the imagination and the creativity. Like, I'm not trying to do that, but there is something true to some of that vibe when you show someone something that's actually different than what they've experienced before. I think people pick up a Z Fold and they expect it to be two phones side by side. It's that thick when you fold it in half. So then you pick up a Duo and it is not that, and it is very different. It's pretty crazy. Oh, see, the Wing swivel screen was the same way. I showed my wife's boss is an extremely talented amateur photographer. Like just a collection of Nikon full frame camera bodies, and like she takes her craft very seriously, and she's done a few like friend favor, like shooting weddings and events and stuff like that. She shot Lex's first birthday. We got her a little smash cake. She turned one, and my wife's boss was so kind to shoot family photos, and they're stunning. She is a very talented photographer. And when the Wing first came out, what was she on? She was on an iPhone XS. I think she was still on the XS. And so I pulled this phone out of my pocket, and it's big. The Wing is a chunky boy. And she's kind of like looking at it. I've got one of the cases on it, and so it's even thicker. And I'm showing her, yeah, and there's some cool camera features. You got manual modes and stuff like that. But then, you know, when you're in the camera, you just flick it. And I throw it into the T-shape, and then she sees, like, I see her eyes, like, freak out. Like, the screen just came flying off this phone. And then I showed her the gimbal mode. And you're like, look, it's got a stabilizer, and you can use this little like thumb pad to move it around. So if you want to do like a real cinematic kind of pan through a shot, you can do that. It's really great at smoothing out movement if you're in bright conditions. Like, and she's just like, she's just buzzing. Like, oh, it can do that. Oh, it can do dual, so I can shoot from the front and the back at the same time. It's got full manual controls built into it. And it's like, again, she still uses an iPhone. I think she's on an iPhone 12 now. But she held something that was fundamentally different than anything she had ever seen or experienced before. And that's also something she never would have seen even in a carrier store, right? You go into a carrier store and you're like, Samsung, Apple. And then you have to like fight through an army of salespeople to get to that back dusty shelf that has anything on it that's not Samsung or Apple. And that's where the poor, sad little LG Wing would have been in a Verizon store. And so, you know, again, without making that kind of a Herculean effort to do some phone shopping or phone comparing, no one's going to see these things. So if we're not at least being somewhat accurate in the depiction of these products on YouTube, then there's zero chance for average consumers to get a vibe on what this thing is like. Barry, I'm glad I'm cracking you up, because this stuff, we should be having more fun with this stuff. Even when I'm complaining, it's still with the fun of, like, that's why I get into this stuff, and it's why I enjoy it. So, you know. maybe some of these other techies who have access to just tables full of incredible technology could be a bit more consistent in how they handle this stuff. From Japico. So what you're saying is that people like innovation, but then end up buying old technology, like being interested in exotic food, but still eating at Applebee's. Kind of. So I'm very encouraged when I show someone a Duo or when I show someone a Wing, I don't want their reaction to be, I need to go out and buy that just because it's so radical or it's so novel. But something like the Wing might have made sense for my wife's boss. She really would have run those cameras to their limit. She really would she's the kind of person who would have created content off of that phone. But her entire family is iOS. They're all iPhone users. So what do you do with an LG Wing when your normal carry gear is a Nikon full-frame DSLR and an iPhone to communicate with your family? Like, that woman carries a full-frame DSLR around with her. So what do you do with an LG Wing? It fits kind of in between. It's a great action camera. It definitely had better sensors and better video capabilities than the iPhone XS. But at that time, like, where does it fit? So I totally appreciate her not like, I know what I'll do because this phone has a good camera. I'm going to throw out my entire investment with iOS and Apple and my ability to iMessage and FaceTime with my family and get this phone that flips its screen. It's tricky. And that's where I'm realistic. But there are people out there who are going to see the Wing and be inspired and want to use something like that. And if the only videos that they find on YouTube are people going, well, you know, gimmicks. I don't think we should pay for gimmicks unless it's a Samsung gimmick. Samsung gimmicks are worth it, but not other company gimmicks. Well, then, yeah, they're going to get, like, that excitement is just going to get a bucket of cold water dumped on it. There were people who would have been exact right fits for phones like the LG Wing. There are people who are exact right fits for a Duo or a Duo 2. And it can't just be, I know, I'll buy the Duo when it's totally failed in the marketplace and I can get it on a fire sale. Yeah, I guess. But that's really the recipe for making sure you never get subsequent iterative improvements. I mean, there is no LG in the marketplace anymore because that became their business model. I'll buy LG when it's bargain basement and it's on fire sale. And when it's like, you know, LG thinks they can charge almost as much as a Samsung. I'll wait. I'll show them. I'll wait until it's super cheap. But look, that's now actually happening to Samsung. You should never buy Samsung at launch. We know for a fact that their current business strategy is stumbling at the premium tier and that they're going to cut prices. Like, especially, like, in South Korea right now, Galaxy S22 and 22 Pluses are, like, half price at the MSRP, and then carriers and other phone leasing strategies are being employed to help you cut even more cost off of them. If you have a Galaxy S21 Ultra, Samsung will give you a $1,000 trade-in for a Note 22. That is not the mark of a company that has confidence in their products and their pricing. And I really need that. I really need people to hear that. If you trade an S21 Ultra for a Note 22, Samsung will give you a $1,000 trade-in. So what was the benefit of getting 5 years of software updates? If you're going to flip your phone like that to get the bestest trade-in deals to help inflate the sales numbers at Samsung, did it matter that you got 4 years of OS updates? Is Samsung ever going to, like, be scrutinized of the quality of those OS updates 4 years later if their main strategy is wrecking the value of their products to give you better and better trade-ins when their phones don't sell as well at launch? The S21 did not sell well. It didn't sell great at launch, and then sales plummeted. And now, the S22 is in a similar downward spiral sales trajectory, and they're trying to pump up those numbers with crazy trade-in deals, lots of additional accessories and perks, cutting prices on outlet sales through Amazon, and now trying to get you to flip a one-year-old phone, for a $1,000 trade-in.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
If I pick up a Motorola and say, like, it's probably only going to get two major operating system updates, if that, that sales window is kind of the average. Now, your trade-in is probably not going to be great, and I don't know what phone resale rates are going to look like for a Moto Edge Plus 2 years from now, but you got to tell me, what's the big hook for 4 years of Samsung software if the best way to trade in your Samsung is to go every year or every other year because the phone that year isn't selling very well and you know you can get a crazy deal on it? Where is the benefit? Where's the beef? Because I'm old and I love 80s pop culture references. So that to me is kind of the thing we need to talk about. If we're going to talk about an expensive phone, we should. And we should detail what that expensive phone can do. And if you want to see that kind of innovation, or if you think this is something that you're really going to like, if you look at a Duo 2 and you say, man, you know, this is an idea that vibes with me, you got to kind of put your money where your mouth is. If Microsoft sees that the only way they can sell a phone is after they've made a bunch of them and they sit on store shelves and then they've got to cut the prices for fire sales, they're not going to keep making portable tablet phones. They're going to walk away. So if you care about that kind of a vibe, or you think that that's going to be something interesting for you, unfortunately, you got to wear your heart on your sleeve. I wholly expect that Microsoft and Android will eventually leave me as a consumer. But I'm here for the experiment because what I want is the best possible pocketable Surface. And I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is to the tune of buying a Duo and a Duo 2 at full price. Don't be like me, but, you know, care, encourage, support, participate. That kind of stuff matters, or else you'll only ever get the exact same experiences that you've already had. And that's the audience that I feel is thirsty for some kind of conversation. A lot of people out there want the exact same experience they've already had, but they want to be told that somehow the exact same experience they've already had is somehow better. And I don't want that. I want wholly new experiences that I wasn't able to do on older phones. And I'm willing to pay a lot for those new experiences if they really deliver. And increasingly, they have. It's just complicated. From Kemi 2. I use the Wing and it always makes people look at it. I also recorded a couple of videos while running and the stabilization was above expectations. I did one. I was running around my daughter at the park, and there were some teenagers just kind of hanging out, and none of them like talked to me or anything, but like, this looks weird, right? You know, like, it doesn't look like anything they've ever seen before. So I was definitely getting some side eye from a pack of teenagers. But again, I ended up with really awesome, like, super stabilized footage of my daughter, like, running through jungle gym kind of stuff. It was pretty great. Raymond it. Now that the LG V60 is getting Android 12, is it worth the purchase of the device? I feel bad. I feel bad for people that really listened to tech reviewers back in the Galaxy S20 and LG V60 days. For people who cared about functionality, features, memory expansion, premium tier, high quality audio, dual display, stylus support, anyone who slept on the V60, a phone that launched at $799 against the $999 starting price for the little Galaxy S20, anyone who missed out on the V60 but cared about those features missed out on one of the all-time best phones ever made. Ever made, bar none. The V60 deserves to be referenced in the same kind of brute force, everything in the kitchen sink, raw capability as phones like the Note 4. It really was that disruptive of an idea, but at that time, people had already sort of given up on LG. LG really wasn't marketing very effectively, and we could kind of see the writing on the wall, now looking back, that LG corporate was already looking at their exit strategy. They were already trying to sell the division or remove themselves from directly manufacturing these phones, and that's the bummer. We'll never get phones like the Velvet or the V60 ever again. There's no money in making a hugely feature complete, everything in the kitchen sink kind of device. So now if you care about things like headphone jacks and memory card expansion on premium tier phones, I think my Xperia 1 Mark II is over on the bookcase, but your only option right now is Sony. That's it. That's all we have left. There isn't anyone else making that combination of hardware. And we still don't get things like stylus support or desktop modes. Like, it's rough. It's really rough. So, I mean, if you look at, like, the Moto Edge Plus and you buy it unlocked, you'll get 512 gigs of storage. That's as good as we can get without, like, actually having memory card expansion. And we're going to buy it around $1,000. So I do feel sorry. So this is Fat8893. $1,000 trade in for the S21 Ultra in favor of the Note 22. Yes, please. I don't feel sorry for people who pay full price at launch. I do. Again, they're the audience that hate me the most. Samsung Knights, the most diehard Samsung fans, regularly try to pick at whatever they think is going to make me upset. Every day, I'm muting 2 to 5 people who are like, you're just sad because LG left, or you're so biased, no one take you seriously, I have terrible grammar. And they're like shilling so hard for Samsung. But even despite that, it's everything I can do to tell people, never buy Samsung at launch unless you're really going to take advantage of like Samsung points, trade-in deals, and you've got a lock on their accessories. Buying Samsung at launch is the best way to throw money away on something that we know is going to get a price cut and is going to devalue radically fast. Don't do it. Don't do it. I feel bad for any consumer that rides that hype train, ends up with something like a Galaxy S22, and has a mediocre experience. Someone on a Galaxy S10 probably has a better daily driver experience with a nicer screen, memory card expansion, headphone jack, still have features like DeX on a phone that doesn't run crazy hot when you do basic stuff on it. You just don't get the 5G. That's a better phone. Why are we pretending? Why are we playing this game? Samsung is not getting it done. They are not inspiring consumers. They're not living up to their reputation as a market leader in consumer electronics. And in North America, they've bought their position. They haven't earned it. it's there's no more evidence that I can regurgitate. Like, it's all there. The writing's on the wall. What are we doing? Why are we even pretending? And yet we still have an army of Samsung shills. Just like, no, they're the Samsung Innovate and some more. It's so awful. It's so frustrating. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like McCorkran 3, don't get me wrong. I do recognize security updates are important, but just functionally speaking, there was very little downside for me not updating my V60 for an extended period of time. What I'm hoping is from Android 12 to Android 13, we see that next step in Google carving out more of the update strategy. It has been refreshing seeing how many core components are updated directly by Google now. You've got like Google's Android Intelligence. We've got Carrier, something, I can't remember what the Carrier name is. There's now a series of like four or five individual apps that are updated through Google Play that are directly related to security patches and for functionality on the phone. And Google has kind of taken all that back. Then you get to Google Play Services updates. And then you start talking about manufacturer and other component manufacturer updates. Even Qualcomm is updating components directly through Google Play, sidestepping some of the carrier and manufacturer involvement. Like a Qualcomm Voice Assist is now a directly updatable component through Google Play. This is absolutely the right direction. And I'm increasingly less worried about new phones that we know won't get 4 or 5 years of operating system updates, but the security patches, the bug fixes, all of those things are now handled directly in ways that are even faster than how we might see updates tackled by Apple. Because we know, like, if you go into 4 years on an iPhone, you're not getting feature updates, you're just getting bug fixes and security patches. They call it iOS 15 or whatever, but you're not getting the same iOS 15 as someone who bought a new phone. So let's not pretend that that's somehow better than individual core app updates for components for security and bug fixes and patches. That's where I'm like, I get it. I want to be able to say, yeah, you're going to get 4 operating system updates. But my Galaxy S10e running Android 12 is not as smooth as it was on Android 11. I'm having more app crashes. I'm having more camera issues. It is not better for getting Android 12. It would have been better to stay on Android 11 and just continue to get feature and bug fixes and patches and improvements that way. So I don't want to, you know, yuck someone's yum if they really care, like, oh, I need 4 years of operating system. I don't know that you're really getting the best experience that way. I don't. We need to audit Samsung. But right now, Samsung seems very much encouraged to get you to flip your phone in 1 year regardless. So if you bought a Galaxy S21 thinking, well, I'm really in it for the long haul and I want 4 years of software and support and updates and features. Oh, but you know what? In 2 years, I should flip my phone on a trade-in and that way I'll get the best deal for my trade-in. Those two ideas are diametrically opposed to each other. They should not be held in the same brain of the same consumer. That's gross. Oh, Tech Junkie went back to the S21 Ultra. I almost did that $1,000 trade-in for the Note 22, but I realized for me the Note features aren't worth it. I just bought a refurb S21 256 instead, decent price for it off of eBay. That's the premium tier S phone right now. There is no 2022 premium S phone. There is an S22, an S22 Plus, and a Note 22. And someone who did not care about stylus functionality being built into the phone has no option. The only option is to go back to the S21 Ultra and get that phone, and that's your Ultra. It's shocking to me that we're letting techies are playing this dumb game just being a marketing arm for Samsung. They killed the Note. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. From Kappa Cash. I saw part of that video. I didn't watch the whole thing. I'm sorry. In my Why the Pixel 6 Hate video, I said YouTubers should never tell their viewers how to spend their money. Don't review the Xperia 1 Mark III and then tell them to buy a Samsung. And I think we all might know who you could be referencing there. In a Sony Xperia video, where the conclusion is, but you should just buy average consumer Samsung Apple. Yeah, it's disappointing. Because, I don't have high expectations that everyone should go out and buy an Xperia 1 Mark III. I have very high expectations on a handful of smartphone consumers who care about a particular flavor of camera performance will only get that itch scratched by buying an Xperia. And they might not even know yet that that's the itch that's really driving them crazy on their current phone. You put an Xperia into someone's hands, and it is a very different kind of reaction than if they pick up another iPhone. iPhones are very familiar. They kind of just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And then you put an Xperia in their hands, and there's an exploration that immediately starts happening with this very different kind of device. And that's a shame. It's a shame because we know most people who already own an iPhone or a Samsung are going to stick with what they're familiar with. But a core group of consumers are being left out of the conversation because their needs really aren't being met. And that's sad because they're still spending money, but they're not spending money on what they really want or what they really need. Kappa Cash, my daughter laughed at me when I said my Pixel 6 doesn't have a headphone jack. You raised her right. Good job. And McCorkran, the Play Services updates make the OTAs a little less vital to me. And it's a part of the conversation. We've lazily just let Apple dictate, we support our phones longer. And we haven't really broken down the feature fragmentation on iOS as compared to the more direct bug fix implementation that Google is trying to pull off. I wouldn't say Google's there, but the improvements have been startling in how many core components on our phones are being updated directly through Google. So that's the fair conversation. Instead, we just go, Apple does the better software. And you're like, they really haven't. It's really no different at this point. You're picking different pros and cons, but Apple as a company seems to work the hardest at making sure problems on their platform are just quieted down. Not that they're really fixed or not that they're really better. We just don't prefer you not make as much noise when there's a humongous security issue on iOS. Like when browser data was being leaked across all of Safari. Well, Apple will fix that problem, though. Apple's always the fastest at fixing the problems. That wasn't better. Like a Google Chrome update would have fixed that way faster than what Apple could have done and how they eventually patched Safari. Had the exact same thing happened on Chrome, mobile Chrome on an Android, that would have been fixed significantly faster because it's a direct app update. The Google team working on Chrome would have said, oh yeah, push this, and it would have been up on our phones. We never would have had to have waited for an OTA to fix data leaking out of Safari. So again, we're not really consistent when it comes to stuff like that. And it just furthers the marketing at Apple that we take their marketing for granted. Well, Apple said they're the bestest, so that's just what we'll say in our videos too. And it's silly. Because now we've sold an idea of a phone as something that is not reflective of reality. I'm way behind on the chat, if you guys couldn't tell. I'm now just getting to the part of the chat where I was talking about core services and stuff like that. Some comments about refurbs. some folks talking about boutique and specialty hardware. Someone was asking questions about NextDoc. I'm hoping to start talking a bit more about some of that. I really want to do sort of a roundup and a showcase and look at like my UPerfect and my NextDocs plugging in a bunch of different phones. I still need to revisit the Red Magic because there's something kind of interesting happening with Red Magic. And the Android desktop mode could be kind of fun to take a look at for a gaming phone. There's a lot of stuff there that I really want to play with. Aditya. No, Aditya, usually you're the one that's saying the nicest things about Apple. Heck, my dude, Apple struggles with camera themselves. Like, calm down, yeah? It's kind of frustrating because these different flavors, these different feels aren't very well documented. It takes me a while to shoot on a phone and get a vibe for what I think that phone does well. We have certain expectations and there's kind of a continuity. Like I really enjoyed shooting on the OnePlus 9 Pro. I immediately look for some of the things on the OnePlus 10 Pro I liked about the OnePlus 9. And from there, I can kind of tell you, okay, well, it's different when we look at this, and the 9 Pro actually did this better, but the 10 Pro does this, and that's really fun. But I got to shoot on it. Like, I really have to use it. And so you kind of hold up this unequal conversation where a tech reviewer lives out of an iPhone, and then they occasionally use an Android for a week under embargo before consumer-grade software has even been pushed to the device. And then they go and tell people, it's not good enough. The iPhone has gooder colors and the better camera. And we've never gotten to that point where we can explain the only reason why you're getting better shots out of your iPhone is because you're so much more familiar with your iPhone. And that's it. It's just familiarity. It really is, there is no technical advantage, there is no software advantage, and when you look at the raw, beautiful, powerful capability of something like a Vivo, you can miss me with the computational additions to iOS. Like, the Vivo X70 Pro Plus made the iPhone 13 feel like it was a generation behind when it launched. And when you really try to drive content out of a phone like an X70, when you shoot RAW or shoot manual mode on a Note 22, when I can pick up a OnePlus and shoot 4K 120, when I can point to an Xperia Pro I, which really isn't that expensive of a phone when you compare it to an iPhone 13 Pro Max with more storage, those two go toe-to-toe. Except for all of the crazy things that a Sony can do that an Apple literally can't, that an iPhone has gotten rid of to make you pay more for accessories and features. It's that kind of real dollar-to-dollar, feature-to-feature kind of comparison that's sorely lacking. And instead, we get this like, oh, well, I mean, why would you spend $1,600 on a Duo 2? The iPhone 13 Pro Max has twice as much storage for less money. Why would you compare a Duo 2 against an iPhone 13 Pro Max and only talk about spending money for storage? Because, don't get me wrong, iPhones invented folding phones, but you can only fold an iPhone once, and then you're pretty much done. That's what we're doing. That's when I say, hey, look it, we're moving the goalposts around. They're literally moving to one specific feature just to make iPhone owners feel better about themselves instead of saying, like, there might be a reason someone would switch their phone to use something like this instead. That is a niche, focused conversation, but it's worth having that nuance when we're talking about a device that's $1,000 or more. It's basically been the theme of this entire rambling podcast this week is, why can't we deal with nuance instead of saying average consumer? DTNL, Juan is pulling a TK this week with the chat today. I'm trying to. You guys are way off on conversations and I'm rambling way too much. TechJunkie452 The iOS feature fragmentation sucks. Where I work, we have a bunch of 11s, and the face mask unlock feature is only on the 12 and up. I doubt there's that much hardware change between these two models. But if you have an iPhone 11, why are you poor and broke? Why didn't you just go buy the iPhone 12? And again, when you have the iPhone 12, why are you complaining about miserable battery life and terrible 5G support? Why are you poor? You should have flipped your iPhone 12 and just gotten the iPhone 13. Like, that's how Apple fixes things along the way. And they've got an army of sycophants that all act like having the latest and greatest color option of a new iPhone is the way that they show off wealth and that they're prosperous or something. But I totally feel that because I had the iPhone XS, and it made me crazy that the iPhone 11 got night mode, but the iPhone XS didn't get any additional camera functionality. It didn't even get the new camera UI until like a whole extra year of iOS updates launched. So that whole phone was like a year behind. And one of the best pieces of hardware that Apple ever put in, the actual hardware force pressing, I forget what they called it on the XS, if it was 3D touch or something like that, was completely devalued. That phone had a more expensive, more organic force press interaction than the software version of it, and Apple completely got rid of that. They cheaped out on force pressing to then give us, I don't know what we replaced it with, but they could still keep charging the most for their phones. But at the same time, like shortly after I had the XS, we had phones like the Pixel 3a. The iPhone XS retailed for $1,000, never got any substantial camera improvement or upgrade or update. And here was a $350 Pixel 3a that blew the doors off the XS for low light photography. Like, it wasn't close. At a third the price of what I spent on that XS, a Pixel 3a was a better daily driver with better computational camera capabilities. Like, what are we doing? What game are we playing here where we're just mimicking and regurgitating whatever Apple and Samsung PR tell us we're supposed to think about these products? Because it's not fun. It's not fun if it's just, let me read you the press release that this company put out, and I will shoot the pretty B-roll while I read the specs off at you, and you should only buy a Samsung. Ben Gate. Gormlord. I want to take that clip and post it as a real take from Juan. Please do. 3D touch. It was 3D touch on the XS? I think it was. I can't remember. So yeah, I'm a little more positive on the iPhone 13s, but that's only because Apple figured out, hey, maybe we should put a bigger battery in our phones. Like, after years of this nonsense of putting in like the bare minimum battery capacity for all of these other phones for an average user to make it through a day of use and have to charge overnight. And then they tried to do that with 5G on the iPhone 12. Now they're getting credit. No, we got to give them credit. The battery life on the iPhone 13 is excellent. But it always could have been. It always could have been. And now we need to admit that from the iPhone 10 to the iPhone 12, Apple purposely put in inadequate battery capacity compared to the realities of daily use of the modern consumer. And only with the iPhone 13 are they now starting to reflect that in their manufacturing. Cool. I'm so glad Apple finally got there. Awesome. So yeah. We should probably start kind of wrapping all this up because I've been rambling on quite a bit. I really did mean to spend a little bit more just, you know, kind of answering questions and stuff. I mean, I was interacting with the chat and kind of piggybacking on what y'all were talking about. But this is going to be a very busy and kind of a hectic week for me getting videos out the door. I probably will still get my OnePlus 10. So for those who were curious about some of my other experiences, OnePlus 10 Pro, my first week of use of real solid, put my SIM card in it, drive the phone hard kind of use, was on the road. I don't have a lot of pretty B-roll of the OnePlus 10 Pro, but that video is going to go out, just kind of expressing some of my specific, some of my specific experiences, very early reactions on the camera, the new software, some of the new camera modes that are kind of interesting, that OnePlus is playing around with some of that stuff. So that should be going up later this afternoon, probably like 4 or 5 p.m. Pacific time. So try and keep an eye out on that. And then I need everybody to kind of keep an eye out for the crew of people who are streaming throughout the week. Lewis is at Tech for Your Needs, should be streaming this evening. Tuesday is Kimmy, that's Gadget Goddess. Wednesday is Eric at Easy Computer Solutions. Thursday, I don't know if Mike and Ike are back, but Tech King Mike and Ike's Tech Talk are normally streaming on Thursdays. Then TK and I are going to be streaming for Best of Our Week Thursday night. Friday is LaShawn, that's Holler at Your Boy, for sort of the more crass, drunken, hilarious side of tech conversations. Saturday is TK Bay, TK's stream Saturday mornings. Sunday is El Jefe, Jeff, El Jefe Reviews. I mean, we've got a whole week of incredible streamers and some of the hardest working people doing this kind of mainstream tech conversation. So check them out. It really is good stuff, kind of going throughout your week and getting a couple different perspectives and some great group conversations and some really fun chat rooms just for talking about all this stuff. Especially for people, like, I've increasingly been interested in following North American tech geeks who are really into import phones. Like, that combination is so much more fun right now than just, like, I don't know, Galaxy A53, I'll make another video about that, I guess. Thirsty for Samsung ad revenue. So that's some really, really good stuff. So, folks, I want to thank everyone for dropping by. I hope you've had a lovely time just kind of hanging out. This was a kind of a rambly, sort of a chill pajama podcast. Next week, we're going to be back on track for news block, subreddit block, gadget block. And there's going to be a lot of news to cover for next week's show. Spoiler alert, we're getting into some pretty interesting territory for upcoming product releases and announcements. So, folks, stay tuned. Really fun stuff. I hope you all have an amazing week. I hope this helped kick off your week. I hope you're excited for the week ahead. Some really cool tech gadget commentary, some fun stuff to chat about. I want you all to have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to do awesome. I want you to be awesome. I want you to be those great tech neighbors that we all aspire to be. I know I'm preaching to the choir in this live chat, but again, I'm always impressed by the tech neighbors that we have joining this conversation. So take care, be well, be safe while everything is still crazy. And hopefully we don't see COVID case numbers rise too sharply over the next couple of months so that we can really enjoy our summer as we get into the summer, and a summer of really awesome gadgets and gizmos. I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA Podcast channel. I'll catch you back. Be safe. Be well. I love you all. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.